Scorpions Avenue. Is it really you?
It is me, girl. And I know it's you, but your background does not look like your shitty apartment. You look like you're in like a nice space right now. This is very different for you.
Well, I am in Philadelphia, where I shall DJ this evening.
Home of the cream cheese.
Yes. And then I'm headed to Pomona to do that Club 340. Ooh. Yes, they named a club
with Wesley Hull, right? I love Wesley. He's great.
He is great. He loves Madonna, and he will often throw Madonna song lyrics at me, and I'm like, baby, I don't know those. I know the
girl.
I know the In Vogue song lyrics.
Girl, one time I said like one thing about Madonna, and he almost like threw me out of the car. I was like, relax, Mary. It's not that deep, bitch.
But the thing is, hit me. He's not as old as me, but I'm closer in age than you and him. And so it's like he will often throw out stuff from like Betty Davis movies or whatever. And they're great movies, but I don't like recognize 660 movie lines like that. I mean, you know, unless it's a, you know.
I mean, you've done many lines that are, I don't want to say that joke because I know that you struggle with addiction and I don't want to, you know, bring back your ghosts of the past.
Well, don't bring it back unless you got some drugs to go with it. So Monet, this you're just back from the UK and you're in New York.
I am. I was in the UK doing some stuff with the Vivian because it's not a secret. Bridgerton season 2 is coming out. So they took the Vivian and I to finishing school, and it was actually very fun. It was very cute. I had a blast in the UK. But I mean, I just love going to the UK for fucking sausage rolls. I love sausage rolls. I want one in my mouth, in my pussy, in my ass. I fucking love sausage rolls, girl.
Okay, so enough about your diet. Did you enjoy England?
I did. It was actually really sunny when I was there. England was surprisingly really sunny. People always say how shitty the weather is in the UK, but every time I go, more times than not, it's sunny weather. So I don't understand this whole, it's so cold and it's so dreary and the sun never shines. That is literally not my experience when I'm in the UK. So, you know, go off if that is yours, but I like it.
I think that the New York weather can get harsher. It does get cold in England, but not as cold as here. However, it is often damp, and that can put a chill in you over there. That is often the case.
Well, you put a chill in me.
Well, honey, I tell you what.
Ooh, that was a nice rhyme.
I had a great time. I was there for 1 month. I took a week off after it all, and I saw Jujubee and Holly Stars and Vinegar Strokes and Kitty Scott Claus in that play Death Drop that sometimes.
Yeah, I love her.
How was it? Kitty was great. Juju was great. Holly Stars, who wrote it, is a freak of nature. And she is just totally off the wall humor. And I loved it. Everyone I went with loved it. So, I mean, it's sick. It's like, if it's not a West End theater, it is a West End theater. So it's a big theater. And it's like, sometimes the humor is so trashy that it just tickles me pink that something is being produced on that big of a stage, because it's just shit jokes and all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a really fun show. I got to do maybe 2 weeks of it before, back in December 2020. I did myself and Courtney Act. We did a week of shows before they canceled it because of the Delta variant. So
okay.
Yeah, I had a great time doing it back then.
And I know that Willem, I think, was over there and the cast was getting COVID with Latrice. And Latrice is going back in it. So,
Latrice, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see that too. But anyway, I had fun, but we're back stateside. I want to thank people who chimed in about our last episode about Russia. And a couple people fact checked me and they were right. One was just a lady on Twitter who said that, you know, I'm rolling my eyes at Ebony and Irony for the first time because you do not know anything about Eastern Europe. That is true. And I believe that
I do not. I do not know a thing. Bitch, I don't know about anything about East Brooklyn. Okay, bitch.
Well, I mean, so let me just explain what went on. Last week, I was in a hotel with not great reception, not great internet, and now Monet is in New York. So, and we had to do it at 8 a.m. my time in England and 3 a.m. Monet's time. So, we, you know, and I was trying to look at the headlines, you know, with no internet. So, at any rate, we dove in, and I did get a couple things wrong that I wanted to correct. Crimea is a different area that Russia and have already fought over. It is not the Donbass region. Mm-hmm. And the Zelensky was not put in power by a coup. He was elected. So I got that wrong. But there was a coup a couple years earlier that did put in the one that U.S. wanted. So I got that a little bit mixed up. And apologies for that. Right. I'm happy to admit it when I'm wrong. It happens once a decade. I know that listeners are going to be very excited to know that you are not only nauseous, but jet lagged, and you've got crinkling foods and medicine. So, I mean, this is going to be one hell of a podcast. I mean, if our guest wasn't so fantastic, I would just sit and talk with you.
Our guest is not only a nightlight visionary, a nightlight luminary. He is very handsome. And I have known him for a very long time, and he is so fucking great. He has been around nightlife. I don't know how he's been around nightlife for so long because he looks so fucking young. But, you know, he's everything, and I love him so much. Please put your mother tucking keyboard fingers together. Put your eardrums together for the very, very lovely Frankie Sharp. Hi, Frankie.
Hey, welcome. Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here. Monet, you have a lot of things going on. You sound kind of drunk too. What is happening?
Drunk?
Oh God, she's so
fucking bitch. She's eating.
She's drunk.
Nauseous,
she's
on medication. Jet lag, drunk. Jesus. Aluminum foil drug taking.
Do you see how Frankie? You see how lucky I am to share this once a week.
Oh, no, please.
I get it. It's why Mariah Carey surrounds herself with her dancers. They're all shorter than her. It's the same kind of thing. I get it. Anyways, I'm so happy to be here. Hi guys.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, we have wanted to have you on the podcast for a long time, especially when you opened up. Well, in COVID, when Bunny and I started this, that's when talks and conversations about your new super fucking nightlife headquarters that you opened up, that's when it started, like, the buzz was going around it and it was coming in. And, mm-hmm. you know, because with the pandemic, everyone was talking about, oh, after the pandemic, New York is going to go back to how it was in the 90s. And they're going to have all these big clubs and they're going to be more like that. And that's when your club was talking about. So we wanted mm-hmm. to have you on the podcast for a while to talk about Hush. And we're happy to have you here. How has the pandemic Lovato treated you, and how is it treating you now that we're coming up out of it?
It's one of my favorite things to talk about because, I mean, it affected all of us in such a crazy way, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because me and my partners were looking at opening the queue for
the Q. Why did I say Hush? The Q. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. The Hush is another bar that one of my partners owns as well. So I get the confusion, and I know you're drunk.
read her. So read her.
I'm gonna drag her. So anyway, so in all seriousness, so it was like it was March 2019. We started looking for venues, and this was, of course, way before the pandemic, way before COVID. And it took a lot. It took a long time for us to get the community board on our side, the block association, mm-hmm. the city, the state, you know, et cetera, all the logistics, getting the design on board, and. It was March 8th, 2020. Finally, we got an email from our landlord that said, it was March 8th, 2020, and it said, come and sign your new lease for your four-story nightclub, March 15th. And then March 13th, or March 12th was when the whole world fell apart. And mm-hmm. so we thought that that was over, that was it. And, you know, like I said, the world fell apart, and we started losing friends, and things got really scary, and I didn't know that even if the venue was ever going to open, I didn't think nightlife would ever return. And that was a really, really intense time. But, you know, throughout the months of monitoring how it was all going, in a way, after I kind of relinquished as much as I could the anxiety of it all and the depression of it all, it was actually the first time in 10 years that I had a break. And first time in 10 years that I didn't have stress that was induced by, you know, drag queens and DJs and
Google Boys,
the whole mania of
Lil
it.
Cam.
And I was like, oh, wait, I was like, wait, this is really nice. And so when I could lean into that a little bit more, it became a really, really special time. And I think now that because I'm so busy, I find myself weirdly romanticizing quarantine in a weird way. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. So now that we're back in it, and you know, this was before the number of different variants that popped up, people were going fucking haywire, where like, it was kind of scary to be in the club because people had been home for a year and a half that they just, it was as if no one's ever been out in their life before. People were right. getting wasted, breaking shit, being really crazy, being so intense, but also so much fun.
Okay. So
we were like, well, oh God, this is it. We're going to be rich.
Let me get the timeline straight. So March 2020 is when the world ended, and you mean that there was a lockdown yep. for all clubs, like for the first time in my life and probably yours. When did people start to go out again with abandon? Because we have all heard, and you know, hey, club people are hopeful,
yeah.
Even if they're old, you know, that these reports of, oh, then the roaring 20s are going to be back once COVID is over.
Right, that was the thing.
Yeah. And it certainly was for a little while. I'm trying to think of that timeline, actually. That's a really good question, because we opened June 24th. We opened Pride Weekend 2021, so almost a year ago. And I remember it was probably, yeah, and we kind of did that on purpose, right? Because we thought, like, what a great way to bless the space and welcome the community in that way. And mm-hmm. I think the bars around us, I think a lot of people were doing like sidewalks, drink sales and to-go drinks and outside performances and that kind of thing. But that wasn't something that we wanted to do, because when I wanted to return to nightlife, I wanted to return with a sense of normalcy. I didn't want to associate the queue with the trauma that we've all experienced. I wanted to kind of be the beacon of what we all experienced, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. But I think, so I remember they started doing outdoor drinks maybe in spring, summer, or maybe in the spring before that, June. And I remember being like, I'm going to let everyone make a bunch of mistakes and then learn from them. And then we'll open our club on Pride. And then when we opened our club on Pride, it was just out of control. It was exactly what I expected. It was the roaring 20s. And it was as if people forgot how to party. So they just went full tilt boogie like they were 16 years old again or something.
Well, there's an emotional aspect to this, because we were cooped up.
Absolutely.
And we were going crazy. I mean, you know, I mean, you can't just shut off people's lifelines, whether it's their jobs or their, you know, friends or the ability to meet men or women or whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, you know, I was alive for the roaring 20s. I was not alive in my 20s. But I will say you have always fostered because how I first met you was Westgate, right? I was like, Frankie Sharp, Westgate. Mm-hmm. I would go to Westgate. And Westgate was such a specific night in New York City. And it was just like weird, cool party all the way downtown on Clarkson Street and West End. And it was just like really cool party where you could come and you could see Thorgy Thor doing the fucking Circle of Life at the same night that Lil' Kim was coming to perform. Like, it was like, that was my introduction to Frankie Sharp. Yeah. So I feel like people missed that crazy New York City energy, how you can see all these things in one space in one night. So was that what you were trying to recreate with the Q?
Yeah, definitely. I always kind of consciously thought of myself. Look, when I moved to New York in 2000, it was September 11th, 2009. I remember that because my one-way ticket was extremely inexpensive. So September 11th, 2009, I moved here. And before I moved here, I had such a crazy affinity for New York nightlife, whether it was Warhol and then Limelight and Michael Alec, or maybe just Limelight and the Club Kids, and then Suzanne Barsh and Michael Musto and Lady Bunny and all of these people that came before me that like quite literally created, you know, this person that stands before you now. When I moved to New York, a lot of that stuff seemed like it was kind of missing. And I was DJing and doing events in San Francisco, where I'm from. And I really wanted to bring that kind of like hedonistic, guilty pleasure fun back here, because New York seemed really serious at the time for whatever reason. So in that, I always consciously thought that I was going to be the bridge between sort of the serious darkness of what was happening in New York with like the kind of light fair of nightlife, if you will, that I was bringing from California. And then also on top of it, bringing downtown and uptown together, Brooklyn and Manhattan together. And I think I did that pretty successfully by incorporating everybody, right? Whether it was, you know, the art world, the fashion world, the music industry, you know, the Twinks in Hell's Kitchen, you know, whatever it was, it was a moment in time that it seemed like everybody wanted to be around everybody because we had been weirdly segregated just by the nature of our geographic location for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And because Westway was in this like dilapidated strip club, it was cool and elegant in its bizarreness.
Seediness.
Westway was so good.
I know I can like go on and on about it, like in a really sort of annoyingly poetic way, but it was bonkers. And also it was like, I think like we were still smoking inside, whether or not we were allowed to. And it was just crazy. And I will say, like, I don't remember a lick of it. I don't remember any of it. I'm shocked that it was successful as it was, because I was the one running it when I don't remember much of it at all. Like, it's a crazy, crazy blackout of a time.
I remember your crazy ass outfits. What, by crazy, I mean like so fierce, right? Like you would have on these like crazy fucking things with sleeves and fucking spikes coming out your fucking ears. And it was like, wild.
Because I was like on ecstasy or drunk, like getting dressed and going to work. So whatever I was wearing, like felt really good when I was high at the time. But, I think it really reflected the chaos of what was happening in my life. And I think people really responded to that. It was really amazing.
So what are the elements besides like a rundown environment, you know, like Westgate was held in? What are the what creates the seediness? I mean, I have an idea, but for you, what does it create? What creates it?
I think that I'm most successful when I lean into the guilty fun, right? I think when I remove the seriousness of it all, I show people, look, I'm doing it too. Like I'm being sleazy, or I'm like swinging from the rafters, or I'm like making trouble. I think people are like, oh, okay, cool. I can do that too. And I think I just give the space for people to just like just fuck around. I don't know. I think that's really important because I think also being at the Q, I know I'm going all over the place, but I, you know, at the Q, we're a queer owned and operated nightclub, and our security reflects that, and our management staff reflects that. So we're not policing everybody. We're actually encouraging people to be more silly, be more stupid, get into more trouble. I mean, don't break shit, but like, you know, have fun. Who cares?
Yeah, go suck a dick in the bathroom. And if you get caught, apologize and promise not to do it again, but do it again in a couple weeks. Yes.
Ask for permission.
Oh, yes, yes. Consensuality is very sexy. Absolutely.
Consensuality is super sexy. Yes, exactly.
Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. If somebody wants to grab my old ass, let them come on and get it.
I do think that controversy is a little bit of it, right? So I think was the last Pride, y'all opted to have Azealia Banks. And, you know, Azealia Banks has a very tricky history with the queer community. I've had fights with Azealia Banks online, and I can acknowledge how fucking brilliant and how much of a musical genius I think she is. But the bitch is crazy. And she said some crazy shit about the queer community that people were like, I do not want that bitch in our space. How come you guys opted to have her?
Well, that wasn't us this time around. I forgot who tried to book Azealia this year. Oh, no, it was Bushwig. That's who it was. Bushwig wanted to have Azealia. I mean, Azealia's been a friend of mine since Westgate. Westgate, again, was another interesting time because all of these big acts wanted to. We had nothing for a budget, nothing. But all these big acts really wanted to perform there because there was this, you know, it was a moment in the cultural zeitgeist that people really wanted to participate in. So that's where we met. We became really good friends since then. We both like oddly practice funny witchcraft. And, you know, I think we had a lot in common. And I think also we talked too much, right? So at least we had someone to talk to about stupid shit. She's brilliant. She's amazing. I think she's really, really smart. I think she's, you know, problematic in the sense that I think that's part of her art form. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. But, yeah, that wasn't us this time around booking her. That was Bushwig. I don't know if I would do that again, but I'm not sure. So I can't really speak on that.
Yeah. Gotcha. It was okay. The Bushwig. Yeah, they booked her. But you know what? The funny thing is we talk about permissiveness, like smoking inside clubs, which was illegal when people at Westgate did it. I don't smoke cigarettes except to maybe like, you know, after a whole tour, I'll go and bum a cigarette or whatever, like, you know, but it is permissive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can listen to the lip syncers or whatever who are saying, oh yeah, now I don't have to dry clean my costumes every night. My wigs aren't full of smoke. But at the same time, it felt, even though I didn't really smoke, it felt permissive to do that. And today is so, you know, whether it's people, you know, I mean, we're not very permissive. I mean, there's actually campaigns against smoking with drag queens. I don't know how we, you know, I mean, since we mentioned.
Whoa, crazy.
I mean, smoke weed. At least weed doesn't smell. Well, smoke weed.
But people don't, some people don't want the high from that.
Weed smells.
Some people.
I mean, weed does not make your clothes smell. Cigarettes make your shit smell like shit. Weed, you like smell like weed for like maybe like an hour or two, then you're good.
Well, I mean, but the people it's not just about the smell. I mean, people want the high from weed or they don't. They you know they're having either alcohol or weed or both or more. But yeah, it's like when they start. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I just think it's such a complicated, I think that's why I was sort of like, I have nothing to say here because it's such a complicated, nuanced topic of, I mean, I think what we're getting at is like separating the art from the artist, right? And I think that because I think visually she's stunning, right? I think lyrically she's brilliant. I think musically and rhythmically, oh my God, wow. Rhythmically, she's brilliant and a genius. And it's really, and as a DJ, it's hard to not play her because her music turns up the room, right? And there's also kind of, for me, there's also a sort of nostalgic sense of when I first moved here and when her music first came out. Like when 212 came out and I just moved to New York, that was my anthem. And it's really hard for me to separate that. And I don't know if that's just an old way of me thinking, but, you know, as a person who came to Westgate and performed for me for really an insane friends and family discount, it's hard for me to think that she doesn't support queer artists because she supported me my entire career.
Listen, I still listen to her music. I can't stop because it's so fucking good. Like, I can honestly, listen to her music. I literally cannot stop.
Yeah, but it's also funny because I always see queens who are like, oh, Azealia Banks, this and that. And I'm like, okay, but you literally just lip synced her song the other night, but whatever.
Uh-huh, in a mix, right.
Well, one of the issues is that people are, they can be canceled. I don't remember what Azealia said, but it was deemed, you know, transphobic. And it seemed, she said other stuff too that was pretty sick and pretty wild. But, you know, people are who they are in their, in your personal dealings with them. I mean, if you don't, you know, not everyone's going to know Azealia like you do, which is why you have different opinions on it. But people are their music, or they are who they, you know, I mean, that there are what they grew up around. It's just like, I don't know everything that she said. So I'm not going to, I'm certainly not defending her. I'm not really even a fan of her music. But, you know, it's just, it's with the permissiveness, we're not very permissive. We're always ready to wag a finger. And I think that's, I mean, I even wag fingers, or people wag fingers at me with people who I used to go out in clubs. And sometimes I just think, wow, I really loved bumping into you on the dance floor. Online, you're like a virtue signaling fucking nitpicker. You know, it's like you were never that person all those years. You were like twisted drunk, you know, and now you're like such a, like a, you know, I'm going to slap your wrist. It's really, you know, because whether it's the cigarettes or whether it's getting drunk, or let's be real, taking drugs. I mean, that, if you don't remember it, I remember taking drugs at Westway. So, you know, that's something that goes on that makes clubs fun. And, you know, I think, you know, New York has become very slick and corporate, and we do need funky spaces. I mean, that I think it's funny that now people will probably, everything is so slick and sterile that people will probably pay more to be in a dive. I mean, I'm not saying that Westgate, I'm not saying that the reunion is going to be in a dive. It's at House of Yes, which is a great venue. When is that?
I mean, it kind of is. Yeah, it's at $3 Bill. It's Tuesday, March 15th.
Old person getting Brooklyn venues. Oh, that's okay. The old person gets the Brooklyn venues confused. $3 Bill, March 15th.
Okay. I barely know where I'm sitting right now.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday, March 15th. So actually next week, Tuesday, March 15th, 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. at $3 Bill. Saucy Santana is performing, who does that single
Bitch
material
work.
Girl, I'm so excited. I'm personally going to freak out. And then Willow Pill, who's like my favorite from this season of Drag Race. And I actually kind of sort of stopped watching Drag Race, except Willow Pill really took me this season. I think she's very special. And then Bailey Styles, who's like the princess of Westgate, is going to make an appearance and do a performance. And, you know, all of my old hosts, all of my old dancers, some of my new hosts and new dancers from the queue. So it's kind of, it was wild. That started when Linda Simpson started posting photos from Slurp on her Instagram.
Is that me?
And, you know, and she was another person, much like you, Bunny, who fostered this idea that I could come to New York and do something and nightlife and be an artist, I guess. And which I'm really grateful for. Thank you. And so when Linda started posting all these photos, I started getting really excited, because then Facebook would say like, oh, this is what you're up to 10 years ago. And I was like, 10 years ago? How is that possible? So then I started posting the old photos from Westgate, and then everyone started responding and talked and had their own funny stories about the space and the party. And then I was like, 10 years. I'm like, why don't I just do a 10-year reunion? So I just decided to. And it was a nice way for me to marry, you know, the old and the new, which I didn't realize I could ever do in my own career and existence. So I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So that's coming up March 15th at $3 Bill, not House of Yes. Old Lady Bunny is getting her Brooklyn hipster venues. Confused. And that's just going to be a big dance party with Saucy Santana and with Willow Pill, who does, nobody commits suicide in a bathtub like her, except maybe Whitney Houston.
You love trying to get canceled. That's a thing.
Well, like, you know, I mean, listen, as Monet said, if you stay canceled, you never can't get canceled. Anyway, Westgate, I actually know that Saucy Santana song. So that is a big hit. That's it. Where is Saucy Santana
really?
From? I do. Excited. Yeah, it's got millions of views. I watched it.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Even I.
Okay. Well, Frankie, that was my question to you. How do you go about curating these artists? Because I will say you're someone you do bring such a diverse and eclectic array of artists all the time. Like, how do you go? Like, how do you get that?
I'm just really relentless, and I'll just bug them until they answer. And I'll honestly, like with Lil' Kim, I just like DM'd her until like she couldn't take it anymore and was like, fine, I'll answer you.
Word.
You know, and then we like became friends, and then we, you know, kept booking her or whatever. I think it kind of goes back to being able to put together a roster of people that feel, I mean, like Willow Pill and Saucy Santana are complete opposites, but at the same time are like kind of the same to me.
Oh, absolutely.
They participate in the same sort of vortex of absurdity and glamour at the same time. So I love that, right? And I think people really respond to the juxtaposition of the performers that I always have. And again, it's always bringing kind of opposing forces and talent in the same room. And I think that friction people get really attracted to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, I think with Saucy Santana, I just DM'd their manager had a contact, and I just kept emailing their manager until they were like, fine, we'll do it. I think they're opening for Lotto, who I'm so obsessed with. Their booking rate just like tripled or quadrupled like right after I booked them. So I'm so happy about that.
And what is Lil Kim like? What is she? She seems sweet to me.
She's very, very sweet. She's very sweet. I mean, I wouldn't call her a friend. Like, I don't call her up or text her. But anytime she's around, you know, we'll, like, hang out and have a drink, you know, when she's at the event. But for the most part, she's surrounded by so many people that I couldn't even tell you what she's really like.
Okay.
Gag.
You know, she's very, very much protected by her giant entourage of people.
She's tiny. What is Lady Bunny like? And like how is she? Because I mean, I do like a podcast on her, but I never like met her in real life. What is Lady Bunny like?
She's very loud. I would see Bunny, because Bunny, I used to live right close to you in the West Village, and I would go to Starbucks a couple of times over there. And
she would be outside begging for change.
No, but she would be ordering her coffee, and then I would want to say hi, and then she would just like run away, and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm not saying hi to Bunny today.
Well,
and I'm like, oh, I
have a really good excuse for that, because years ago, I was passing this friend of mine. I thought we were friends. He knew me in drag. He knew me out of drag. We'd been in clubs. We'd been at private events, whatever, for years.
Yeah.
And so I walked past him and said, hi, George. And he looked at me, and he was talking to this really gorgeous guy, and he looked at me. Oh, shit. Decline.
Oh, there goes George right now. Do you want to answer and say hi?
I know. George is like, what the fuck?
So I said, hi, George. And he looked at me like I was trying to talk to his piece that he was trying to pick up, and like giving me shade. And I was just like, okay, honey, you tried to be nice. You tried to come out of your shell. That gives you the excuse to be a bitch. Let him say you're a bitch. You're not going to go through that again where somebody's trying to, because first of all, I didn't want George or the man. So.
Aww.
That was like, I said, you go ahead and let him say you're a bitch.
Not this West Village drama.
That is West Village
right,
drama.
Right, I can't.
Tell me what Kim Petras is like.
Oh, so sweet, so nice, so kind, like cute party girl. Not much to say. I know her in like a superficial kind of way, like just, again, through events, through friends, that kind of thing, but perfectly lovely.
Okay.
Is there anyone that you are dying to have that you have not had yet?
Doja Cat.
Doja.
Doja Cat and Rosalia.
Those are Rosalia. Two
people that I really, really want.
Yeah.
I know. I'm sad because, you know, again, like I I'm such a music freak, and I've loved both of them for years and years and years. And I kept trying to get them, and kind of the best time. I've been really lucky about getting people at the right time, kind of like Saucy Santana too, where like right before they super blow up, where I can frankly afford them. But now it's like there's just no way, right? Like Rosalia and Doja Cat, they're like, I mean, I would probably guess like $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to get. It's just, there's no way, unless I'm booking a festival. I know, which probably now people have ideas about who to book. But yeah, I'd love to book them. But it's also, you know, aside, I got excited by Westgate Reunion to book Saucy, to book Willow, but I haven't really, we don't really book like that at the queue. At the queue, where we kind of are more music driven, we're about the DJs, the environment, the vibe. And I think that makes people come back to, like, anchors people there and then allows people to want to come back. I don't think we really, really needed to do that there, right? So that's been kind of really nice to not have to super stress out about these huge bookings.
And Kevin Aviance is a DJ there, friend of a podcast.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Kevin DJs with me. Thursdays, we have this bonkers party called Cruisers that I put together. Ooh, Cruisers with a Q. And it's so we take over all three floors. The first floor.
Oh, there are three floors at the club?
Oh, bitch, you need to come. What's going on? Oh, you're in New York now. I'll text you offline. We'll figure it out.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'll give you the grand tour. But yeah, wow. Cruisers on Thursdays is probably our most popular night. And you know, when it's a non-weekend night, you know, the hardcore people are going to be out. Right. So me and Kevin Aviance DJ on the first floor, Mitch Farina, who you all know, DJs on the second floor. And that's where the Go-Go Boys are. There's a secret room to go to if so chose. And then the top floor is
a secret
big,
room to go
like,
where?
Disco dance floor with Luis Fernando.
Wait,
and
a secret room to go where?
There's a secret room on the second floor. They do like a book club there in the back. So everyone weekly gets together.
A book club.
Okay, wait, girl, you had me a disco floor. Okay, so when I come, I want to request that they play the Kylie Minogue disco album from front to back, and then follow it up with the Jessie Ware Spotlight album from disco shit from front to back.
You got it, but also you should be a DJ, Monet. Those are both two really good cuts.
Oh, I literally, me and Kim Chi started taking DJ class together because I really want to DJ.
Ooh,
and
again, when I love DJ, that.
I don't want to be one of them raggedy bitches that just takes an iPad and presses play. No, I want to actually mix my fucking music and like DJ for real, for real.
Oh, I love that for you. That's a really good moment. Well, I was gonna say one thing because I made the one note that I made today, and I just didn't want to forget. Was sort of off topic, but it goes back to the pandemic. But Monet, you know, during the pandemic, when all we had was kind of ourselves or whoever that we were with at the time, and at the time it was my partner and our best friend. And, you know, when there was no more nightlife, every single day or every single week, I would watch Monet or The Exchange Rate.
Oh, my
God. And that was my way of still kind of communicating or still kind of having an attachment to nightlife and the vibrancy of.
Yeah.
It was like sort of startling to me that I was like, wow, people are still putting on makeup and putting on a wig and getting ready to do things. And that was really, really nice. That was really nice for me. And it's funny, like if I was like working out or if I was cooking dinner or anything, like The Exchange Rate was always on. And that was really, really nice. So thank you for that. That was, like I said,
thank
I
you
keep
for watching.
Well, I keep romanticizing the pandemic because it's like I miss quiet time, and that was part of it. And that was really nice.
I mean,
so anyway, sorry, that was my fanboy moment.
Well, so
thank you. I love that. I love that.
That was Monet moved on to bigger and better things like Ebony and Irony. I guess sibling rivalry or whatever the fuck that shit is. But so honey, you worked with Charlie XCX, Kim Petras, Azalea Banks, RuPaul, and Lil' Kim. You're not gonna give us any dirt? Who can you talk some shit about that was a horrible mess? Well, that's what we want. This is a podcast.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
it was a cunt.
God.
What drag queen is a mess? You hate them. Come on.
And what drag queen was a mess? Oh, Charlie Hides wasn't very fun. I didn't love working with her.
Oh, really? She has some fucking nerve.
She's got some nerve, and she was pretty aggressive and a little delusional.
Interesting.
Who else?
Wait, when did you work with Rue?
I DJ'd the first two RuPaul conventions. I DJ'd the main stage.
Oh.
And she, so I DJ'd through all the performances, and then her, and then she had a perform. She didn't have a performance. She like got up on stage.
Yeah, she didn't have a performance. Trust me, she didn't have a performance. No,
but she was perfectly lovely. She was very, present.
We don't want to hear that. We want the gossip. We want to hear.
God, you're a monster.
We want to hear who you avoided.
Again, like, I don't really. Again, I really don't remember much about Wesley. There was, I mean, there's a couple of people that I feel like, I mean, again, like one of my favorite things about what I do is I really get to know these artists, and for the most part, they're really lovely. What I've realized is kind of the more successful people are, the nicer they are. This is what I've experienced, and sort of like the kind of lesser successful they are, the sort of meaner they are. But
it'd be them fucking Housewives of Atlanta or Housewives of Potomac,
kind of,
or Housewives of New York City bitches that've been on one season and be like, I need 8 yellow grapefruits, peeled skin.
Yeah,
yeah, like they'd be those bitches.
Yeah. There was a lot of local queens, especially, would be like, I need to be in the VIP section, and I kind of historically don't have a VIP section. I think it's sort of trite and bizarre. I mean, it's New York, like we're all VIP, right? Yeah. So, you know, when they request like a red roped off section, I'm just sort of like, why? That's so bizarre.
And you know what?
No.
Sometimes they try to put me
to that question.
No, bitch.
Sometimes they put me in a VIP, like when I went to
What's
Twist.
That where I try to put you?
Then they went to put me in a VIP in Twist in Miami Beach, and I was like, wait a minute, all the gods are out there and you want me to sit in this fucking with a bunch of drag queens with a rope around me? Go to hell. I hate VIP shit.
Yeah, I know. I hate VIP too. It makes no sense. I feel like it's super. I want to be like in the mix of everything, or I either want to be in the mix of everything or just keep me at home. I don't need
Bunny. Bunny just wants someone to VIP on her.
Frankie, we have a story, and if you don't remember anything from West Gay, we have a story that I love to tell. When I went to DJ at West Gay, you told me, I got there, and it was right around the time that Rihanna's song, I Found Love in a Hopeless Place, was a big hit. You'll beat that one. So every DJ played that at least 2 times a night because it just got the crowd going. And so I got there and I said, so what do you want me to play? I know I said, let me, he said, play anything you want. And I said, okay. So in other words, how many times tonight do you want me to play Rihanna, We Found Love in a Hopeless Place? And you said, you don't have to play it at all if you don't want to. And so then halfway through the night, and I may have been enjoying some substances as well, you came and said, Michael Stipe. You said, Michael Stipe is here, rock musician, very famous queer rock musician from R.E.M.
Yeah.
Is here, and he wants to hear We Found Love in a Hopeless Place. And I was like, you've got to be kidding. Mr. Alternative Indie Rock. Wants to hear that. So I just laughed in your face and thought that you were you were kidding. And so then you came back up in a few minutes, like saying, oh no, that's Michael Stipe. I said, what? I thought you were kidding. Then you pointed to him and he was like in a fuddle, walking in and out of the room and looking up at the DJ booth and squinting, waiting for me to play his fucking song. And I was
my God, that's so, I super don't remember that, but I love this story.
Yeah, I was like,
actually reminds me of when Parenza Schuller, I always forget how to say their name, but they brought, everyone was like, oh, Kirsten Dunst is here. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, the girl from Interview the Vampire. I love that movie. And so she came up on stage and she was wasted, which is cool. I mean, we're all wasted, obviously. Clearly I was. And she was like, can you play Robin? And literally Robin was playing. I'm like, oh, Robin's playing right now. It's like, it's Fembot or whatever. And she's like, no, play Robin. I'm like, no, Robin's playing. And she's like, fucking play Robin. And kind of got like a little irate about it. And I was like, Robin is playing. And I was like, wow, Kirsten Dunst is really intense.
Well, I mean, that you
wait,
do
wait,
deserve...
Bunny, did you play the song for the guy? Did you play?
Yeah. So did you play the song for Michael Stipe?
I think I did, but I don't remember because we kind of went in a different underground direction. Listen, there's not a lot of DJs on the gay scene that like underground music, because we're a very top 40 crowd these days, the gays, you know, at times. Yeah. So, Now, I want to ask you about looking on your Instagram. I saw some go-go dancers with skimpy clothes and large protruding, or what looked like protruding penises. How do you get away with that? Because they knock people off of... And if I put one thing, like a news photo of a guy that won in a running challenge in the Olympics, they take me off.
Well, Bunny, you also have a history of drugging go-go boys with Quaaludes, so you know, you understand why they're nervous about you keeping it on.
That was long before the internet. I mean, that's not true.
No, I get kicked off all the time. I get I think I'm still currently shadow banned, which means my followership doesn't even see most of what I post for whatever reason. I think my hashtags are blocked. It's pretty crazy. And then again, there's not much, and I'm actually pretty selective about the pictures of the go-go boys, because if they are too revealing, I'll just get knocked off again. So I can't show too much. I try not to advertise. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it, because then I see, you know, no Sade, but like I see, you know, women with their breasts out, or, you know, or basically any other straight content versus homosexual content or queer content is always there's a huge vast difference of how we're both being treated. It's really, really, really crazy. Stanley Seller, who like, albeit does have pretty, you know, a really great photographer friend of mine. I'm sure you know Stanley Seller. He does black and white photography, documented the piers for years. And, you know, it would literally be like a boy with like the strap of his jock strap showing over underneath his shorts, and it would just be taken down. And then his account would be deleted, which I think happened recently, which I don't get. And then you can show like a whole naked woman and nothing happens.
I see that sometimes. I see what you're saying sometimes. But sometimes Patty, legal minor, yeah, yeah, Patty Cash. Yeah. Patty will literally have an artwork of literally someone drawing his dick on his Instagram and he's posted, and then they'll delete it. He's like, Instagram, like, what gives? Like, you can't like censor my queer art. I was like, Patty, your fucking animated dick was showing on Instagram.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Can I talk about how much I love Patty's current Pokemon evolution right now of what's going on with Miss Legal Minor?
Yeah,
and I'm obsessed with this chapter.
He looks very hot, my little Patty.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you another thing.
Bunny,
about
do you know Patty?
I do. Yes. Not well, but he's your friend, so yeah. I know he's suspect. There have been different trends with go-go dancers, and I think like their zenith was at the Roxy, where people would come from all over the world and pack this huge club, and the dancers were like, oh my God, the face, the dick, the body, I don't even believe what I'm seeing. Yeah. And so then after that, I don't know why this happened, but it happened when I was DJing at a tea dance at Splash, but all of the dancers became twinks with hair gel who were very young and twirled around on go-go poles. And hey, there's room for every kind of dancer, but it was so odd to me, because it was like, is the crowd like older? I mean, is that why they want these twinks? Because it went from like muscular he-men to like, you know, sissified twinks. You know, I mean, I have anything against sissies. I am one. But it was like, I don't usually like to see someone who is like lip syncing to a woman's song, you know, with like, you know, for my taste, I like the manly ones. I guess there's some people that like chicken or, you know, whatever. But it seemed like there was a drastic shift. And until I saw your Instagram page, I haven't seen those Vinnie Vegas around that much.
Yeah. Weirdly, I think it's kind of an interesting question. I think I think about that all the time, actually, because when we started doing West Gay, right, I wanted to have the spectrum of different body types, the spectrum of different gender identities. And, you know, I, from a muscle man to like, you know, someone that looks like a panther to like, you know, a club kid, like all of those personalities and bodies are really important to me. But I think kind of like, you know, from like 80s bodybuilding to like 90s porn star to like early arts kind of club kids, I'm like, there is a weird other cultural zeitgeist to body types in go-going. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I think a lot of that has to come with cancel culture again. I think a lot of it has to come with, you know, if there was one picture of a muscular dude on my Instagram that was go-going at my party, and they didn't show any of the other dancers, whether they were, you know, transgender or, you know, whether they were a drag queen or whether they were high femme or, you know, whatever the rest of the spectrum was of my dancers, if I didn't show that and only represented one muscular dancer, I would get read on Instagram. Like I was, you know, mask worshiping or whatever. And so I found a lot of the other promoters and producers and people who book dancers found the need to start booking other dancers, not in the way that I did, because I just like other body types, but in the way that they felt like they needed to satisfy this like this need to be inclusive, which I think there is a need to be inclusive, but in a way that I think that they felt that they were kind of bullied into, if that makes sense.
Well, there's a need to be inclusive, but
I think that art starts to mirror the times, right? I think that now,
we have
opened ourselves up to what different body types can look like that are sexy. Yeah. Because I mean, I don't think I had from the times I used to sneak into fucking Escalita, which they probably were that I didn't know, and they weren't like, you know,
yeah.
So 12, 13, when I started working in clubs, 21, 22, whatever, I never knew that trans men used to go-go dance. And now I go to clubs in whatever city, and I'm like, and there are trans men who are go-go dancing. So I think it just starts to mimic what the culture is and what is. And
yeah.
I mean, I do feel like sometimes there may be a little virtue signaling in there to be like, oh, look what we have. Like we're really inclusive. Come to our club, because that club isn't. I think there is that. I think there is a little bit of that, but I think the time just starts to mimic what, you know, what society is like, get it together.
I think you said that totally, totally on point. I think that's exactly right. And it's interesting. What's also kind of cool is that being in quarantine for a year and a half, and then coming back, and then in a way, there was a whole year and a half of time that passed by that a new group of kids moved to New York. And so I saw this new generation of people and the way that they wanted to present themselves and their identity, both aesthetically and sartorially, but also you know, and gender expression or whatever. It was it was really cool because I had these like huge muscle boys wearing like mini skirts and sports bras, but like as their everyday look. And I was like, oh, work. This is interesting. Yeah. I love where this is going, right? And my boyfriend, who's so funny, he like he's not really up to date with like pop culture and stuff. And he always makes fun of me when I'm watching Euphoria, which I love. And he was like, kids don't drink. He's like, and he barely comes to the queue. He's like, you know, pretty busy and like sort of out of the nightlife scene right now. And he's like, do people even dress like that? I'm like, yes, my entire staff at the queue, everyone dresses like that. Everyone has like jewels on their head and fucking fringe and things falling off their bodies. And everyone's a slut who does too much. Like that's what the look is right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just honestly thought it was odd that it was.
I want people to bring back like 90s and 80s. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, I just thought it was odd that it went from like one type within a few years to like another type, and it wasn't inclusive, you know, and call me old fashioned, but I like the old fashioned kind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to sit there and jack off and tip a fucking, you know, I mean, somebody that doesn't turn me on.
Yeah. I mean, but I think the thing is that some people do, right? I think for me, and I think a lot of people, I think it goes back to, I think those twink dancers, honestly, if I could just be brass tacks about it, feel comfortable doing that now, right? Because more and more spaces are, you know, especially like the queue, do foster that idea of come be yourself, have fun. And it is a safe space. And as trite as that word is, safe space, that's really what I tried to build for everybody, right? And I think everyone's starting to feel a little more understood. And I think, again, post-pandemic, everyone's giving a little bit less of a fuck, too. They're like, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing.
I would love 80s, like 80s and 90s workout wear to become trendy again. I want people to be in full-on jazzercise fucking Lisa
Monet,
Turtle.
Monet, you need to come to the queue, bitch. That's how people dress.
Is it really?
Kids are so out of control.
To the gym.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I feel that. I feel that.
Right?
Yep.
Well, I want to be clear.
Bunny, a gym is a place that people go to work out.
Oh, they have. I go to the gym. They have great, great food at my gym. Wonderful food at my gym. So we've been talking about two different things with Frankie Sharp, promoter extraordinaire, who has been on the cover of the Village Voice and who is nicknamed the Fixer because he knows the right entertainment to bring in about two ventures. One is a one-off 10-year anniversary of his very popular and seedy and wild and amazing party, Westgay. And that is at the $3 Bill, March 15th. What night of the week is that?
It's Tuesday, March 15th. And you can get tickets at westgayx.eventbrite.com.
And that is with Saucy Santana and Willow Pill. Is this Willow's first New York City appearance?
I believe it is because I think I put that in her contract. So, yes.
Okay.
I believe it is
because I think I put that in her contract. Now we get a glimpse of the behind the scenes. And also, I mean, you did this incredible thing. I'm the one who's always saying, oh, there's no big clubs in New York. And you actually opened one during COVID and it worked. And I have not been either. So Monet and I are going to have to press our ass through there at some point soon. I would love to hear Kevin DJ because he does wonderful sets on Instagram. You are also a friend of the late, great drag sensation of New York City, Mona Foote, who kind of crystallized the New York City East Village and beyond drag scene, but you two were friends. And Mona was actually, Nasham was actually one of the first people who a lot of us knew who passed away due to COVID. How did you two meet? Because I know you were good friends.
It's hard for me to not get choked up about when Nasham's name is brought up. We were very close. I met Nasham. They came to my party at Bedlam. This was like a decade ago. It was my very first party. And he wanted me to DJ at the Cock. And then I said, yeah, of course. it's infamous. So I DJed at the Cock and we became very close because I was doing two weeklies there. And so I see him, work with him all the time. And then he told me Mona wants to make a return and Mona would like to make a return performing at your birthday. And I said, okay, you can perform on my birthday. And then Mona performed my birthday, did her Wonder Woman act, killed it, was amazing, was brilliant. And, we were neighbors and we just became really, really close between, between then and when Nasham passed away. What I think a lot of people don't know is right before Nasham, months before Nasham passed away, he was parlaying his creative work into TV production. And Nasham started working on TV production for a reality docuseries on me and building the Q and my staff at the Q. And that's how we became really, really close. And then, back to the timeline of the lease signing in March of 2020, that was around the time that I went out to Le Band to see Kevin DJ. It was Sunday, like March 6th or something like that. I don't really remember. And then something told me to go say hi to Nasham at the Cock that night. And I went to see Kevin. Then I went to go to the Cock to say hi to Nasham. And I didn't stay very long. And I knew there was rumblings about COVID at this point in time. So I didn't want to be too crazy and stay out too late. And so I just remember saying hi to Nasham and then saying bye to Nasham and then thinking that was a really special moment and a tender moment that we had. And then 6 days later, I got a phone call from a mutual friend that said he had passed away.
Yeah, I mean, it was so sad.
That was really intense.
Mona Foote, aka Nesham, was very dear to many of us, and it's you know, at that time, and I'm sorry to say that it's still this way. The treatment for COVID is go home, and that's what Nesham did. And you know, they said don't come to the emergency room unless you're really exhibiting. You know, and it's like 2.5 years into this, I really wish they would, you know, there are some drugs that they're working with, Paxlovid, I don't know the names of them, but, you know, there's like a monocolloidal antibody treatment, but that's too expensive and it didn't work on the newer variants or something like that. So it's like, we're still, there is no treatment. I mean, they're still telling us to take aspirin and drink water, you know, when you get COVID. Yeah. I mean, there's no, like, it's like, get the vaccine so you hopefully don't get a bad case. But other than that, it's like, there's not even a pill.
Yeah, and I think for Nesham, I think it was sort of the perfect storm at that moment in time where we didn't know anything about anything, right? And he, from what I know, had flu symptoms, but they were really bad. And like I said, went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, we can't really do much for you. And at that point in time, people were flooding into the hospital who, like, quite literally could not breathe. And so that took precedent over flu symptoms. And so anyways, well, it sounds like a sort of downer of a topic.
No, I know, but we need to remember her. There needs to be a space for, you know, Mona online, you know, so that people can hear about it. And the sad thing and the shocking thing is that we didn't know much about COVID, and Mona was peak physical fitness. I mean, she was in her 40s, but she was muscular and went to the gym every day. Yeah. I mean, you know, so it was a real, it was a real shocker. But anyway, I'm glad that, I hope that we are on the way out of this, and I wish you much, much success. It really took balls to open like a big club. You know, New York City needs more of that. And, you know, I wish you all the success in the world. And listen, New Yorkers sometimes hit me up saying, oh, what do I do if I'm in New York? Definitely go to the Q in Hell's Kitchen. It's more
of a, darling.
Yes, it's more of a club experience than, you know, your average bar with martinis and maybe there's a drag queen. Yeah. So not disparaging those, but I like a pig club.
The Q is interesting, right? Because it is my love letter to New York in the sense that there's three floors. And the first floor is a cabaret, jazz club, drag cabaret. And the second floor is the cruising lounge, and the third floor is a dance floor. So you'll find that 7 days a week. So there is something for everyone, which is my whole kind of point of creating this this nightlife complex, if you will. So send them my way. There's something for everyone.
Well, I hate everything. What is there for me?
You have always
what is there
been
for me?
I'm making.
I hate everyone who's ever lived. What do you got for me?
I told you there's a book. There's a book. I told you there was a book club
food
in the back.
Is there food there? Should you go for the food?
There's a taqueria next door.
Okay,
the taqueria next door, buddy.
Okay.
That's perfect for you.
Okay.
Frankie, listen, thank you so much for coming on the pod. You have been an amazing fucking guest. And again, congrats to you. And
you
will be around for decades to come, darling.
Give us a ticket link for Westgate. Give us a ticket link for Westgate again.
The ticket link for Westgate is westgatex.eventbrite.com.
And that's this Tuesday, March 15th in Brooklyn at $3
Bill.
Is there a website, Frankie, or is it an Instagram situation?
You can follow me on Instagram at Frankie Sharp and on and Facebook, Frankie Sharp. I don't have Twitter because I think it's garbage. And follow me at Instagram and you get all my good stuff there. And then also follow the Q on Instagram, Q Club NYC.
Great.
Perfect.
We'll do, and we'll see you there sooner or later.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Sounds beautiful. Thank you, guys. What an honor. Bye.
Bye-bye.
A podcast network.